Several years ago, I was leaving a church for which I had preached for 2 years. And as I was leaving, they was having a little going away party for us. And a lady handed me an envelope with a letter in it. And she said, "Now don't read that now, read it later, after you're out of town," was the indication I got. And when I got it, she wrote this long letter about how discouraged she was the last 2 years about my preaching. She said, "All I ever did was condemn anybody who had any money. And all I did was preach against how sinful it was to be rich and to have wealth." And this lady and her husband, they had great wealth. And many people in that church had great wealth. Hence, I preached on it a lot. But the thing that she said in her letter indicated to me that she didn't just have wealth. She had a heart problem in relation to her wealth. The reason I say that is because I never once while there and have never in my entire life preached or even believed that it's wrong to have money and that it's sinful to be wealthy. The Bible certainly does not teach such a thing. Abraham had great riches, as did his son Isaac. David and Solomon were very wealthy men and servants of the Lord. In 1 Timothy 6:17-19, when Paul was telling Timothy the things to command the rich, he didn't say, "Tell them just give all their money away, it's a sin to be rich." It's not what he told them. And so I have never preached such a thing. I don't believe it now. I didn't believe it then. Didn't believe it before that time. But mark it down that there are potentially great dangers for the one who possesses earthly wealth. The Lord meant something when He said that it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to make it to heaven. Matthew chapter 19, verses 23 and 24. Matter of fact, in verse 23, He said it's hard. It's difficult for a rich man to make it to heaven. The psalmist said in Psalm 62, verse 10, "Do not trust in oppression, nor vainly hope in robbery. If riches increase, do not set your heart on them." We live in a society in which thousands of people have become rich by selling so-called get-rich programs to those who desire to be rich. I had many passages to choose from for the key verse for this lesson, but I chose the one in Psalm 62, verse 10, because it dealt with the heart being set on riches. You see, it's not a sin to have riches. But you're in trouble if your heart is set on those riches. Remember, Jesus said to set your heart on the riches of heaven. Lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, not on the earth. And He said, where your heart is, there will your treasure be. And so set your heart on heaven, and you'll treasure heaven. Set your heart on earthly riches, and you'll treasure earthly riches, and you'll do all you can to get them without fulfilling your spiritual responsibilities. There's a popular radio and TV program called Money Matters. I know nothing about the program except that it exists. But I suspect it's one of those programs in which the person who hosts it seeks to give counsel to people about the proper way to handle money. And I have no issue with that. That's fine. I like that. People need some kind of sensible direction if this show offers sensible direction. But the point I want to make in this lesson is that money matters not. Now the Bible tells us to work to make money for many reasons, so that we might supply for the needs of ourselves and for our families, so that we may be able to lay by in store upon the first day of the week to give to the Lord, or Ephesians 4:28, that we may have something to give those who have need. Those are three reasons why the Bible says we ought to work. So we're not downplaying the importance of money. Money is necessary in this society. Even God recognizes that. Hence the commandment to lay by in store every first day of the week for the work of the church. But I'm telling you, there are aspects in which money matters not. And if we don't learn this lesson, we'll lose our souls. As the verse states, there are those to whom riches have come. That's not really the problem. The problem is when they set their hearts on those riches. Now, riches have come. The riches are there. But their heart is set on the riches they possess. I want to suggest to you three reasons this evening why you shouldn't set your heart on riches. Number one, don't set your heart on riches for satisfaction. Don't set your heart on riches for satisfaction. And I take us to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 3 to 11. It's somewhat of a lengthy reading, and I'm going to read it all. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, beginning of verse 3. I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. He had the money to satisfy pleasure. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all my works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. This is a sad story of a man who has endless wealth at his fingertips, and so he seeks out to try to use that wealth to find satisfaction, and he can't find it. With all his wealth and all his riches, more so than anyone before him in Jerusalem had possessed, he couldn't buy satisfaction. He said in chapter 5, verse 10 of Ecclesiastes, "He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity." I'm told that Rockefeller was asked, "How much money is enough?" He said, "Just a little more." There's a man not satisfied. A man once spoke to a wealthy man and said, "I'm better off than you because I have all the money I want, and you don't." He had little but was satisfied and content with what he had. The psalmist said in Psalm 37:16, "A little that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked." Remember what Paul wrote over in 1 Timothy chapter 6 in verses 6 to 8, just before verse 9, when he talks about those who love money and actually deny the faith because of their love and pursuit for money. Well, he says there in verse 6, "Now godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content." That is contentment. Listen, you show me a content man, and I'll show you a man with great wealth, even though his bank account is empty. True contentment is true wealth. Proverbs 13, verse 7 says, "There is one who makes himself rich, yet has nothing. And one who makes himself poor, yet has great riches." Why? Because he's content with what he has. He has all the money he wants. You can go on the internet and do a search and find countless stories of rich men who lived their lives in misery and pain. There are stories of extremely wealthy men who have committed suicide. They thought that money buys happiness, but that's just a bad cliche. Ecclesiastes 6:7 says, "All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the soul is not satisfied." He works, he works, he works. He piles up money. He has the big bank account. He has all the riches, and yet his soul still is not satisfied. You can't buy satisfaction. Riches don't bring satisfaction. For one thing, because you can't take it with you. It's been well said, "I've never seen a hearse pulling a U-Haul." The psalmist said in Psalm 39:6, "Surely every man walks about like a shadow. Surely they busy themselves in vain. He heaps up riches and does not know who will gather them." When he dies, he doesn't know who's going to end up with all those riches that he spent all the time he had working to build. There's a story told about Alexander the Great who conquered the world and then wept because there were no more worlds to conquer. It said that he requested that when he died, the sides of his casket would be left open and his dead, cold, bare hands were to hang out to the side so that when his body was paraded down the street during his funeral procession, everyone could see those dead, empty hands and know that I possess great riches, but I can't take it with me. My hands are empty. At the funeral of a very wealthy man, one man asked another, I wonder how much he left. The other man said, all of it. All of it. Don't set your heart on riches for satisfaction. You'll be sorely disappointed. Number two, not only don't set your heart on riches for satisfaction, but don't set your heart on riches for security. And this thing will catch up eventually, hopefully. Don't set your heart on riches for security. Now, 1 Timothy chapter 6, beginning verse 17. Paul told Timothy to command those who are rich in this present age, they have earthly wealth, not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Let them do good, that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share, storing up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. A man with great riches, he has a lot of money. He goes out and he buys the finest car he could find. And then the next day, he gives a lot of money to a friend who's in trouble. What's he going to be thinking about 10 years later? What's he going to be finding pleasant thoughts in 10 years later? That vehicle we bought 10 years ago that's now who knows who owns it, beat up? Or is he still going to be getting pleasure in the fact that he helped out a friend? There's the security. The security is when you do good for others and you help them out with what you have. You know, there's great misery of rich men because they fear losing it in the next depression. Their entire sense of security is bound up in the numbers of the Wall Street market. There's all the work and labor and stress involved with protecting those riches and managing them. I tell you, it's a lot of stress to have a lot of money. Not that I know personally, but I'm told. And even when they hire somebody to manage their money, they live in constant fear that their manager is a crook and dishonest and stealing their money. And I heard stories about Elvis Presley made all that money and got very little compared to what he made because of the colonel, whoever managed his money. A recent story over the last year or so has been Kevin Bacon. You may know Kevin Bacon. He's a famous actor. He's lived his whole life starring in big movies, making who knows what kind of fortunes, and lost it all because of the man managing his money was crooked. Lost everything. All the worries of the rich man. Proverbs 23, 4 and 5 says, do not overwork to be rich. Because of your own understanding, cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? And sometimes I use the phrase, if you can lay your eyes on it, kiss it goodbye. I don't care what it is. It's not eternal if you can lay your eyes on it. For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. Stories abound about millionaires and billionaires who have committed suicide because they took a great financial loss. There's a fairly recent one about a billionaire over in another country, and he killed himself because he had lost millions. He still had millions, but he had lost millions. And that worried him to the point that he committed suicide. Can you imagine? Many feel no security in their riches because of the way they got their riches. Proverbs 28:20 says, a faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. The King James Version says, shall not be innocent. And now they've got their conscience to deal with because of the people they run over and making their money. Dealing with his conscience because of the sins he piled up, one on top of another, looking for satisfaction in the pleasure because he could afford many of the world's vices. Listen, a rich man has more opportunity to sin than you and I, really, in many ways. Because because they got money to do some of these things I wouldn't be able to afford. You know, there are some sins I don't believe I can commit because I don't have the money in the bank to do it. You ever think about that? But the rich don't have that problem. Really, it's not a problem. It's a blessing. They got the money to go out and enjoy any vice they want to enjoy. That's what the Ecclesiastes Solomon wrote there in Ecclesiastes 2, remember? He used his money to seek pleasure, trying to find satisfaction. Psalm 52, verse 7 says, here is the man who did not make God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches, and watch this, and strengthened himself in his wickedness. You can't find security in the pleasures of sin. I don't care how many of those pleasures you can afford. Oh, the worries that can curse the rich man. Ecclesiastes 5:12 says, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. Listen, there are two kinds of people, the haves and the have-nots. The difference in the two is that the haves eat better and the have-nots sleep better. Men think security comes along with riches. They're in for a great disappointment. Riches have a tendency to come attached not to blessings, but to cursings. Proverbs 15:16 says, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. There's a story about a man riding on a train, and he's sitting across from a woman. She's kind of dressed up. She's obviously pretty high society. And she's got this big, huge, beautiful diamond set in the ring on her hand. And he just couldn't stand it. His curiosity got the better of him. And finally he said, ma'am, I'm sorry, but I couldn't help but notice the beautiful diamond on your ring. She said, yes, that's the Clockman diamond. He said, oh, is it famous like the Hope diamond? She said, no, it's not as big and as famous as the Hope diamond, but it's just as pure, and it's just as clear, and it's just as finely cut. And like the Hope diamond, the Clockman diamond brings a curse to everyone who wears it. And the man said, oh, what's the curse of the Clockman diamond? And the woman said, Mr. Clockman. I remember when I was a kid, I read in literature a story about a man who wished for wealth, $1 million, remember the amount, I'll say $1 million. He wished for $1 million. And the next day his son died, killed in a tragic accident. He collected $1 million life insurance policy he had on him. Be careful what you want with money. Often riches come with a curse and not with a blessing. Don't set your heart on riches for satisfaction. And don't set your heart on riches for security. And don't set your heart on riches for salvation. Not the salvation of the body. Rich men die. Sometimes you might hear older rich men say things like, you know, I'd give all my riches to be healthy, to have my health. Or he may say, I'd give everything I have to be young again. Right? But they can't do it. The money's useless, isn't it? In the face of those things. There's a story about a man who loved gold. Oh, he loved gold. And so when he was rich and successful, he completely redid his bedroom. He loved gold so much that he painted the walls a golden yellow. The curtains were done in a golden yellow. The pictures that hung on the wall were highlighted in a golden yellow. His bed sheets and bedspreads were a golden yellow. He even bought yellow pajamas to sleep in. And then he got sick. Got the yellow jaundice. And so his wife called the doctor, and the doctor came over, and he went up to the bedroom and stayed for a long time. And then he came down, and his wife said, well, how is he? And the doctor said, I don't know. I couldn't find him. He was lost in his wealth. You know, that's the way people are today. They're lost in their wealth. They're completely surrounded by their wealth. They think they're completely secure by their wealth. They think they're saving themselves with their wealth, and all they're doing is they're getting lost. And money. You can't buy health and happiness. And riches won't buy your way into heaven. You can't buy eternal salvation with riches. Proverbs 11:4 says, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Remember what Peter said over in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 18? He said, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold. Goes on to say, but with the precious blood of Christ as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. God doesn't take check, cash, credit, charge. He don't take it. On judgment day, Michael Pickford and Bill Gates will stand on equal footing before the Lord. Proverbs 22, verse 2. The rich and the poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. And we'll both stand before the judge on the last day on the same terms. That is, our lives will be compared with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now who's the rich man? The one who served the Lord faithfully or the one who had billions and trampled all over the Lord getting them? The rich have no advantage over the poor on judgment day. All will be judged by the deeds done in the body. That's what Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10. You remember the conclusion of the Ecclesiastes writer in Ecclesiastes chapter 12 verses 13 and 14? He said after he went through all this stuff about trying to find satisfaction and trying to find security and trying to find all these things with all his wealth and all his pursuits and all his labor. And finally he said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandment, for this is the whole duty of man. I like one translation that says, this is man's all. This is man. This is what man is all about. This is what being a man is all about. This is what living life is all about. Fear God and keep His commandments. You'll find satisfaction. You'll find security. You'll find salvation. I like what the Ecclesiastes writer wrote in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 12. He said, For wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense, but the excellent of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Wisdom gives life, not only life here and more satisfaction here, but life eternally to those who are wise enough to do the will of the Lord. Money can't do that, he said. There's the difference. And wisdom and the pursuit and the love of money. I know a lot of you are saying, Mike, what's this got to do with me? And I don't have this problem. Well, maybe not. But wealth is often defined, or really maybe should be defined comparatively speaking. You know, sometimes I'm a hundredaire. One time a month I'm a thousandaire. There are people in this world who don't know where their next meal is coming from. They don't know where they're going to lay their head at night. Would they call me rich, even with all my debt and with all my bills? Yes. Oh, yes, they would call me rich. Many people in the world would look at me and say, you're rich. They took a look at this suit, which is not noticeable at first, but when you look close, you can see there are stains everywhere. There's a hole here. It's falling apart. And they see me wearing this suit. He must be rich. So there's a sense in which this lesson does apply for us, especially if we have set our heart on riches. Even if we don't have them yet, if we've set our heart on them, trying to get them, we'll pierce ourselves through with many sorrows and forsake the truth, the faith. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Don't set your heart on riches for satisfaction. You'll not find it. Not with riches. Don't set your heart on riches for security. You'll not find it. Not in riches. And don't set your heart on riches for salvation. You'll not find it. Not with riches, but with righteousness. Let's pray.